Point Guard is a production of iHeartRadio.
Jay Kidd liked to try to put smaller guards in the post. And this is what I learned. You know how, like, they post you and you post to use that arm ball. When I put my hand out into his back to stand him up, he tried to turn immediately and elbow me on my wrist. And as he did that, we, like, collided and fell. Right? Because I'm going to lock up and fall with you.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm going to break that shit. And I'm like, what the fuck?
We back. The oracle, the savant, the wooden disciple, Mr. Details, Earl Watson. It's time to dive into what it was like to play against, play with, coach some of the NBA's greatest point guards. Point Guy Podcast. I'm your host, Baron Davis. This is Slick on iHeartRadio. Our freshman year, you know, talk about that, because that shit was like a weird ass year, because, you know, I remember leaving the last time we played the pros in the summer, and we walking out the gym, they was like, man, we gonna kick y'all ass, y'all come back without a national championship.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then first day of school, Shea Cotton, SAT, NCAA, yeah. That was some bullshit. He get nicks. A week in the school, Chris Johnson, yeah. Jelani McCoy, they get hit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like, we already was going through, you know, like, we're trying to find ourselves.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But, you know, overall, like, talk about that freshman year, because I think that freshman year was really, like, a learning. For me, it was a hell of a learning experience to, like, play the backseat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like,
yeah.
Not really, like, I don't know. I was just like, I didn't have the Kobe thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't, like, I wanted to, like, be a point guard. You know what I mean? And I think that, you know, it taught me to, like, one, play off the ball.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And play more like a league guard. But two, it also taught me that it was cool to take a back seat to the seniors. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, dude. Like,
but I felt like we were ready to, like, you know what I mean? Like, it.
I learned this from Hubie Brown. This is big. So when you start a season, a coach has to evaluate and make a decision. And you have to get every player identity.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to know their identity. And one thing about players is we don't always want to be held in a box.
Mm-hmm.
But if you tell us who we're going to be in order for us to be successful, we might not like it. We might not like it, but we will commit to it because we know who we are. Because
you want to play.
Because you want to play.
Yeah.
And I think when everything happened, it was Coach Lav didn't have enough time to give anyone identity. It's kind of like you're going to earn your identity in practice. And so when we played that freshman year, the first two freshmen to start at UCLA in the backcourt in 97 since 79.
Yep.
Coming off a year removed from an NCAA championship.
Yeah, there's a lot.
We went there to win
a
championship. Not just win. We won,
for sure.
But we wanted to win a championship. So for us, the pressure was on us. And then I will see for you, it was more pressure than anything because you from here.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? It was a lot of pressure, but just seeing how you handled it and seeing the family support and being in the games and it was a learning experience for all of us because I've never seen that much media presence covering a basketball team in my life. It was like, at that time, the Lakers and us were like equal in the city as far as media coverage and expectations.
For sure. I totally agree. And I think, you know, I learned a lot from the seniors. You know what I mean? Because, you know, it was almost like when we got there, like, it was just a lot of, like, dysfunction that happened. It was a lot of dysfunction happening.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then, like, you got a coach that's, like, 30-some years old. Like, when I look back at it, people be like, yo, like, I didn't realize how young Lav was.
Yeah.
Bro, if I was 32 and the coach, can you imagine if I was 32 head coach at UCLA?
Yeah. It's tough.
I probably would never come to practice, bro.
Yeah, it's tough. And I'll tell you what, this is
I'd probably get fired for not coming to practice.
The hardest thing to do is to coach talent.
Yeah, and shout out to Lav, though, because Lav, like,
it was almost like he was like we wanted to win for him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like we just couldn't fit, like I always felt like we just didn't have, we couldn't bottle it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we didn't have a consistent way that freshman year of like what we doing. You know what I mean? Because the singers were like, well shit, like Lav, you know, they didn't have, you know what I mean? Like Lav was like the assistant coach when they were freshmen.
Yeah.
So that would be us being seniors playing for like Coach Spence.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so it was like the dynamic was a little weird and everybody was trying to get pro. I remember that. It was a lot of craziness.
Yeah, and that's when I thought LA was crazy.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Like, you know what I mean? Like for me, it was like I say this all the time from because I'm always from the outside looking into LA at that time, right? I'm like, yo, it's so much opportunity and resources that I think, you know, our team took for granted. And this is what's crazy about UCLA. Like, you know, UCLA's had an amazing Final Four run.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Got to win a national championship.
Got to win a national championship. Ben Howland would still be here if that's the case. It doesn't matter. If Lav was somewhere else having the success that he had at UCLA, he would still be there.
For sure.
Like, statue and all. But UCLA is everything or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's kind of like that pressure. And then you talk about the classroom. The classroom, the academics are just as challenging as the game.
Yeah.
So you had – remember we had the professor – from Higher Learning?
D-Knowledge.
He called on me every time in class, and I never read. Hey, bro. He would just call. I was like, dude, you know I did not read that book last night. But He was smacking.
His class was smacking.
He was cold, but he made me be a better student.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So you talk about UCLA basketball and academics to go hand in hand, but I remember first scrimmage game, I never guarded you because we always on the same team. You came down and you crossed the shit out of me. It was so quick. I was like, yo, he been holding back. Hit me with a game move. And that's when I started studying you, you know, and it made me a better defender and a better player, you know, for the rest of my career.
And then let's talk about your career because, you know, when we talk about point guard and what it takes to be a point guard, it's like the God-given talent. You know what I mean? And, like, I believe that point guards maximize everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not just the glitz and glamour. It's not just the motherfucker who made it to the NBA. It's like the essence and the appreciation for someone who defines their artistry.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start with this question since we ask this question all the time. If you were to pick three artists or three people that would define Earl Watson outside of sports and like the art form, how would you describe your game or to these people?
My game? I have to go with Pac.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I say Pac for a simple fact that basketball was just a platform for me to not only express my talents,
mm-hmm.
but also have a platform to have a voice and be unapologetic, right? Because it goes hand in hand. And then, you know, X, who just recently passed away because rest I didn't mind X. mixing shit up,
mm-hmm.
like on the court, you know? Sometimes,
dog.
Sometimes that hood had just come out of me.
Dog.
Right? And then last but not least, man, I always feel like you can take any artist, any painter. Basketball is abstract art.
Yeah.
And it's amazing and dope once you learn how to manipulate the offense and defense in different ways. And so any artist that loves to paint, that we just leave that as like X artist, like X meaning any artist.
I can't do that. X, you gotta. Your favorite artist?
I mean,
I would say I'm Basquiat.
Yeah.
Because I'm all over the place. You know what I mean? I'm coming to the game, whatever happened, we showing up, we running. You know what I mean? So that would be my art.
I'm going to throw it to one of the homies, Brian Pauly Dixon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because he is always evolving his art. Former UCLA football player. He's dope. And for me, that's what basketball is, dog. Like, so this is interesting, man. Like,
shout out to Brian Pauly Dixon, too, man. Yeah. He's fucking fire.
He's dope.
Josh Shipp is fire, too.
I got a Pauly Dixon piece that is a Kaepernick piece. It's just dope. So, like, when we see the game as mm-hmm. point guards, we see it from half court to rim.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because we see a lot of things that a lot of players don't see.
Uh-huh.
Wings see it from sideline to rim. Mm-hmm. Centers see it from rim to half court. And this is when I learned with coaching is because when you don't play anymore, you don't move around, you got to walk around the court to see the angles. Because you'll forget them if you don't walk around and see them when you're in practice. Mm-hmm. And you got to always understand there's so many ways to play the game. You have the vertical, which is rim to rim. You have horizontal, which is sideline to sideline. Then you have the angles, right? And this is when players are not maximized to their full potential. When a coach tries to make them a horizontal player, and they're a vertical player, mm-hmm. right? Or some players are like angle play. Eric Bledsoe's an angle player. Mm-hmm. Ginobili is one of the best angle players. That angle pick
we
and roll.
We was talking to the angler, Rod Strickland.
Cold.
You know what I mean?
Cold. I would have conversations with Rod in the game. Like, he would be dribbling. I'd be like, hey, yo, in that last play. And he like, would coach me during the game, bro.
That's crazy.
But then he'd get in the paint and drop a dime. Like, hold up, bro. Like, I'm having a con. Like, you know, he was always willing to give back in that way, which is super dope. But the basketball is dope, man. Like, it's sliced up in so many different ways if you really know the game.
Like, when you walking into the game, when you walk into the game and what are you putting in your invisible backpack? Right.
Yeah.
And then when you put your Earl Watson glasses on, right? What are we seeing through your eyes, right? And then what are we getting? Yo, we gotta tap in real quick. Let's hear a quick word from our sponsors. Like when you walking into the game, when you walk into the game and what are you putting in your invisible backpack, right?
Yeah.
And then when you put your Earl Watson glasses on, right? What are we seeing through your eyes, right? And then what are we getting? You know what I mean?
So this is interesting. The game changed from when we first got to the league mm-hmm. to when we left the league, and mm-hmm. it's continued to evolve now. How the game is played now is how we played in college.
Yep.
When we first got in the league, it was hit the post, you know, play out of the post. And then for me, it was throw to GP, Vin Baker, and when the ball comes back to you, you can spot be active. Up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then it started to evolve and change. When I went with Memphis and Hubie Brown, who is to me the best teacher I've ever had in my life, this is when I really, my mindset evolved. Hubie Brown has these things where he called activation points. Elbows and midpoint, which is the dunker. He called it midpoint. He's old school. Everything is two dribbles removed from a screen to the elbow or the midpoint. That third dribble past the elbow, you in the paint, you got to have game, Jack, mm-hmm. as he would say. You mm-hmm. know, floaters, you would dunk over people, get to the rim and dime late. I had to have a floater, an elbow jump shot, a floater, or a keep my dribble, baseline draw, baseline drift. Mm-hmm. Right? Midpoint pocket pass, midpoint jump shot, midpoint two dribbles removed from the screen on the step up. I get to that midpoint and I get past my two dribbles. I'm searching that baseline on the weak side, which Steve Nash perfected. Mm-hmm. Right? And then the game changed to where we stopped sending players middle defense and sent them baseline sideline, which we call ice blue, whatever you want to mm-hmm. call it. But as you remember this, one of the best players to effect that and dominate that, Sam Cassell. You cannot send him baseline and sideline because that's where he lived.
No.
Right?
You cannot do that.
You cannot. He was dominant on that baseline sideline with a step back or he'll post you up and have a game. So, like, when the game started to evolve and started to shift, you started to notice different patterns. Like, with Steve Nash, you know he drilled all his combos. It was drilled because you could see him counting in his head, like, one, two, one leg floor. You could see him just counting, right? So I would try to disrupt his counts. Players like you, it didn't matter how much I disrupted your count. You always had counters because you lived in the free space. Mm-hmm. You just said your artist was unpredictable. You lived in the free space. So what I had to do was try to frustrate you in little elbows and jabs and pick you up full court to get the shot clock down. Because if I could turn you two or three times in the backcourt and you get past half court at 16, that means it's less dribbles and combos after guard when you get it back. Mm-hmm. You know, so I had to be, time. I had to outthink the game, mm-hmm. and I couldn't be a player where I let my game just take over. I'd be way more ahead in the game mentally.
Man, yeah, let's unpack that because I love that. When you talk about when you had to think ahead of the game.
Yeah.
Right? You're not dealing with me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're not dealing with GP. You're not dealing with guarding Chris Paul. You're thinking about, yes, this is my man. This is my matchup, right? But, you know, because I would say, like, you are really the first defensive guard, right, to be on the Point Guard podcast. Like, usually, like, and Isaiah really honed in on defense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But Isaiah is Isaiah. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, like, this perspective of and you know young dudes listening and point guards listening is like defensive point guards and lead point guards, they think pass
yeah
the player
yeah
because you know what their tendencies are
yeah
so you're playing against futures. Explain that to them.
So for me, it's kind of like controlling the flow of a game because, you know, the game has a flow.
Mm-hmm.
And whether I started or came off the bench, I wanted to control the flow. So if I'm watching, you know, young D Rose was so fast in transition that everyone was just trying to keep up with him.
Yeah.
What I would do defensive transition is get back and just stop. He always run right into me.
Yeah.
Right? And he didn't figure it out until maybe his second or third year, and he started Euro stepping. Yeah. And when he Euro stepped, I can't do anything but foul.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You always got to give that up.
Yeah.
So you got those type of tendencies. Or, you know, when you think about this, so I was at OKC, and Ron Adams was their assistant coach. He and Dick Harter, who I played for both, two of the best defensive coaches ever in NBA history, mm-hmm. for me. Chuck Daly had all that, you know, Bad Boys, all that. But for me, those are my two because I play for him. I'm biased.
Mm-hmm.
He had a thing of running players off the line. And basketball players are taught to have, you know, controlled reactions and you're mimicked to have habits.
Mm-hmm.
You close out, chop. You close out, chop. Mm-hmm. You close out, chop. And what he would teach is you run off and you jump past and then you jump back behind, mm-hmm. right? So when we played OKC,
mm-hmm.
all I did was shot fake. I knew they was going to jump past me, so I would jump into them because they've been taught that every day in practice.
Mm-hmm.
So what I started to then do is study coaches, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you study coaches, and I play for so many teams and so many different coaches, I remembered everything you taught. I still remember our plays from Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my plays from Nate McMillan and Dwayne Casey.
Mm.
I remember my plays from, you know, Indiana when Frank Vogel was an assistant. Like, they call it nose action. That's all that elbow stuff that became better later with Jim O'Brien. I remember everything. And then I got to Jerry Sloan. And, you know, Jerry Sloan Autos,
Master.
Right? Jerry Sloan Autos was so big, but I was
fucking Autos, man. I hate them goddamn
Autos.
But D Will talked about Autos. I was
hey,
like, yo,
but you know what I realized?
Man,
when I played against
life.
Them, they wasn't allowed to break the play.
Yeah.
So I was over pressure. Because where are they gonna go if it's a 1-4 high?
D Will talked about that.
There's nowhere to go.
He talked about that being his frustration.
Yeah, I was over pressure, dog. So I would be reaching, bouncing, like no space, getting into the area because I knew they couldn't go anywhere. And then when they couldn't go anywhere, Jerry Sloan would just do this, and that's motion, right? That's just pass and cut. And if you get an NBA team passing and cutting, you're gonna lose, bro.
Yeah.
That ain't what we do. Right? You have 16 seconds, not 24 seconds.
Yeah, that's
pass half court to pass and cut and get a mm-hmm. backdoor. So I knew how to manipulate coaches. I know how to manipulate players. And that allowed me to play 13 years in the NBA when the average career is only 3.
Right.
And I wasn't an all-star,
mm-hmm.
but I knew also analytics.
Yep.
I knew if I could be the best assist per possession in the top 3, I knew I always had a chance to play.
Yep.
Because superstars love playing with players who give them the ball at the right time, right spot.
Absolutely.
Which is why Ray Allen loved me when yep. I was in Seattle.
Yep.
I knew how
yeah.
to.
Yeah, all day.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I knew how to snap the pass.
For you to come in. Yeah.
Because I knew, like, when he was coming off a left shoulder turn, I would hit his left hand.
Mm-hmm.
And he come right shoulder turn, hit his right hand.
Right.
And he turned so quick, it was up.
Yep.
So you start to learn players and learn patterns, and you manipulate the whole game.
I love that, man. I love that. And then I wanted to get, I want to also get into like, so you played in, you know, 13 years. That's three generations.
Yeah.
Walk me through your first five people, or who are the first five people you met in the league. You were like, damn. And then when you got into, you know, like the middle part, when you, you know, you a vet. In that era, who are those five? And then towards the end,
yeah,
you play with this new generation. Yeah. Like, who are your, who are, you know, those, you know, five or five, yeah, people that it could probably cross in generations as well?
I was very blessed, man, to guard you every day in practice at UCLA. So that set my confidence at an all-time high,
mm-hmm,
to play and defend against anyone. And then I get drafted, and I could, and then I have to guard Gary Payton, man, every day.
Talk practice about that, dude. How was GP,
GP, dog. Let me tell you about the first time I met GP.
Because Ross Strickland just told us a story that he said he get into the league, he go to the hole,
yeah,
and GP just flat out just puts him in the stands.
Hey, GP, dog.
What is wrong with GP, bro?
So, you look, we play a pickup. This is before training camp. GP doesn't play. He walks in late in some overalls, right?
Oh, my gosh.
Right? He is straight. He's straight R&B thug, right? He walks in with some overalls, and we playing. And he just wanted to disrupt the whole game. He yells, hey, 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 hold the fuck up. Hold up. He looks at me. I'm like, what the hell this dude is doing, bro? And I think at that time, like, you know what I'm saying? He's just yelling, right? And I'm like, what's up? He goes, you tell me. I'm like, I'm so lost, dog. I go, what do you mean? He goes, what do you see out here? Dude, he literally just walks in the gym. He don't see any. I go, what do you see? He go, I see your team tired. I go, yeah, we've been running for like almost 2 hours. He's a call timeout. I was like, and pick up? He's like, yeah, call a timeout. I'm like, all right, timeout. Like, now, he's like, everybody get some water. Your team tired. You call timeout, don't you? I'm like, all right, this dude just want to be an asshole. You know what I mean? I done played pickup 4 years in a row with Magic Johnson. We ain't never called no damn timeout. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
but it is the truth, though. I mean, that's the thing about it.
You call timeout, hey, in a pickup game ever?
Hey, bro.
Have you ever called a timeout in a pickup game?
Are you gonna let dudes get some water? And a rest.
Duh. So I call a timeout in a pickup game. That was my introduction to GP. But check this out. So the whole year, and through training camp, you know, I mean,
you're GP rookie.
I'm GP's rookie, yeah. But GP at this time, you know, Nate McMillan, Coach McMillan was like, GP doesn't like any rookies. He don't like any point guards. We trade them every year, right? I'm like, it's whatever with me. I'm like, you know, I'm from the hood too. It's whatever. So we in practice. I'm picking up GP full court. You know, I could tell he hates it.
I can imagine.
You know what I mean? Like, cause he gonna back you down all, hey, the way, bro, full court.
Especially practice, like he is
training
not,
camp.
Hey, he is not. He for, is. Oh,
he,
man,
is pissed, bro.
Oh my god!
But he ain't saying nothing. You know what I mean? He mad, and I'm low key mad that he tried to embarrass me and made me call timeout. So it's get back. You know what, yeah, I'm saying? And I'm like, yo, I might get cut because me and him might end up boxing, but it is what it is. You, yeah, know what I mean? You know, back then everybody fought.
Everybody,
me.
Yeah. You
it
had
was,
to.
It was always a
you
fist
had
fight.
To be ready. Just to preface everything, these guys were mean.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We came,
it's the handshake era,
into the generation where they had to stop handshaking because if you dudes just wasn't strong enough and they would just, you know, yeah, just prison bar you. You know what I mean? Just like give you the, yeah, form. And so the GPs, you know, Ross Strickland, all these guys, they are homies, they are big brothers, but it was like, they, like, it's like having a real big brother.
Yeah.
Mean.
Yeah.
And will smack you in the mouth, bro.
Yeah.
And will elbow you in the mouth. You better look like if I hit this dude in the mouth, he gonna hit me back, or they gonna take it. Full advantage.
Full advantage. All right, but, so there we go. But remember where I grew up from.
I mean, yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? So I was very comfortable
in
that.
We was very, like, cool with not being confrontational, But if it was to be confrontational,
I was comfortable.
We was gonna turn it all the way.
I was Remember already
what we did in Oregon.
Yeah, we ran up
at the Oregon game.
Well, they tried to jump me.
Well, they
the
tried to
rink.
Jump this fool. Like, yeah, they tried to jump him, dog. We beat Oregon.
Yeah,
he go to the skating rink by himself.
With Todd Remizar. I should have known. Hey, bro, I cannot go to a skating rink with a suburban
bro.
Kid.
Y'all out there gambling, you know what I mean? In Oregon after a win. They was already throwing rocks at the bus, calling us dogs and shit.
Oh, man.
All kind of shit. So but they tried to jump you at the skating rink. Yeah. Some players, believe that. And then they came back to UCLA. And all I remember is getting my ankles taped and I was, my flip-flops. And then somebody ran in there. I forgot who. I think it was Moose.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, shit. Earl about to get the funkin', dog. All I know, I just hopped off the table in my slippers, dog. And I am on the court in the slippers, dog. Yeah. We going to every dude on Oregon like, yo, is it a problem, homie? Do we have a problem right now? Because we don't even have to get to the game. We can just lock up right
game
now.
Over.
Ain't no game. Ain't no refs out here. Let's lock up. And I remember going to every dude. You know what I mean? Oh, man, that was some crazy shit.
Like,
and
not,
we won by 1 point.
Yeah, you hit the shot. But you're not going to jump me and think I'm going to see you again. It's going to be cool. It's just different. So check this out. So GP, right?
Well, that's when we got that's when I hit the shot. Not when we got the layup and the steal. Because the year before, remember we ripped, homeboy.
Yep.
All right,
so GP was that. So you, GP, the third, we're going to play against Utah. Right? I think it was like an exhibition, maybe. Like
John Stockton.
John Stockton. I've never heard GP say anything good about any point guard ever in my life. He never said anything about you because he knew I was close to you. Mm-hmm. So he'd be like, that's your boy? I'd be like, yeah. He'd be like, how close are y'all? I'm like, close enough to where if we get on the court, we probably fight. Okay. That's all he would say.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? John Stockton, right? He goes, hey, this boy right here, cold white boy.
Yo, you know what time it is. You know, this show wouldn't be where it is if it wasn't for our sponsors. Let them have it.
You don't take this for granted. You hear me? This is a, you know, this is a blessing for you. You know, when you face him, it's Mr. Stockton. Stockton. I'm like, yeah, okay, bro. Like, you know, I love John Stockton too, but I'm going to pick him up full court. Yeah. I get in the game, pick him up full court. I'm like, damn, this dude got like, you know, I'm like 21, just turning 20. Telling this dude got real chest hair coming out of jersey, dog.
Leg hair. Yeah.
He like a grown ass man.
He needs the manscape.
Oh, man. Grown ass man. So I'm picking him up full court. And Stark didn't have a lot to him, but he hit them angles quick, right? Oh. Boom, 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 boom. And Stark ran his offense from inside college three. Because if you touched him, it was a foul. So, like, you know, you boom, boom. And I remember you get inside college. Like, he is not about to walk me to the free throw line and run the play.
He is about to walk you to the free throw line every fucking time.
So check this out, Doc. So, I stand him up, right?
Uh-huh.
And when I stand him up, we bounce off each other, and the ball go right past my face. I duck. I'm thinking it's a back door. No one's behind me.
He was throwing the ball.
He threw the ball at my face. I'm like, yo. I look back at him. He said, back the fuck up. I'm like, yo, let me tell you something, dog. It's one thing I can't do is go back to my hood and get punked by John Stockton, who's a great. I got to pick him up again full court.
Hey, dog, John Stockton was a bully, yo.
A bully, yo.
Hey, bro.
But it was also like that invisible test.
Mm-hmm.
If they could punk you, they would punk you.
Yep.
But if they wasn't going to punk you, then they respected you.
Yep.
Right? And that was my John Stockton intro to the league. And then the only dude I watched in college basketball at the point position was Jason Kidd. I got the Cal Berkeley Jason Kidd jersey.
Uh-huh.
I'm wearing it through a hood, and it's navy blue, and my hood was not navy blue.
Yep.
And I'm wearing it all in my hood because it's Jason Kidd, dog. Yeah,
Jason right? Kidd, legendary.
And we go to face them, and Jay Kidd like to try to put smaller guards in the post. And this is where I learned. You know how like they post you, and you post to use that arm bar.
Mm-hmm.
I put my hand out. And when I put my hand out into his back to stand him up, he tried to turn immediately and elbow me on my wrist.
Mm-hmm.
And as he did that, we like collided and fell,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I'm gonna lock up and fall with you.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm going to break that shit. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, all my childhood superstars, hey, dog. Like, all my heroes, I can't even like them anymore. Yeah. So next time down, I'm just elbowing everybody in the fucking face. Yeah. Like, I ain't got no friends in this place. Like, NBA, I ain't got no friendships. I'm elbowing all my heroes in the face. It is what it is, dog. From this point on, I can't even be cool with you. You know, so that was my four. And the fifth to me was... Actually, man, fit to me was just, you know, that whole Lakers team. Like, just playing against that Lakers team with Phil Jackson, Kobe, Shaq. Like, everyone there.
System, bro.
The system was amazing. And I started, that's when I started to study, you know, the triangle and the passing and the cutting and the rhythms of it. And then, you know, and Hubie Brown just, you know, solidified it. We really pressed up full court. Because we didn't want them to get into all their passing and cutting, right? Mm-hmm. They'd just eat you up.
The one NBA team that if they did pass and cut, they would eat you up.
They would kill you. Because it always ended in a Shaq post or a Kobe ISO, right? So we would just press up, and then we would stand up Shaq and make him try to walk you down to kill time because no one could go at Shaq with 7 seconds on the clock. And no one could go at Kobe with any of them. You couldn't go at him with any seconds on the clock, but... You just want to limit that time and let the clock be your sixth defender. But that whole Laker team was just is legendary.
Man, you play with White Chocolate, too.
He was cold.
Man, he was so cold, bro.
He would do things.
He was such a fucking good point guard.
He was ahead of his time.
Yep. Speak on it.
Him right now, because remember, all he did was shoot threes.
Yep.
But back then, analytically.
Yeah, they were just saying, oh, it's bad shots.
Too many. Like, you know what I mean? Too many threes. But this today. He would be celebrated as you know, Kyrie level.
Yep.
Like, if you really think about it. He was so skilled, and he would do dribble moves and spin
Trae
moves.
Young type shit.
Man, I think he was better than Trae Young, dog. Mm. He was bigger. He was better. His handle was better. Yep. And he didn't have the freedom. He was never embraced to shoot a lot of threes like Trae Young is.
He was never really embraced the way he should have been embraced.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think the way he came out and exploded when he was with Sacramento and, like, all they would do was show the highlights. But he was a damn good point guard, bro. He had, like, a hell of a assist to turnover ratio.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, when y'all was in Memphis, like, he was damn good.
Yeah, he was really good. And it was interesting because he had a unique dynamic with Hubie Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Hubie was so much older and was trying to tone... Coach Brown reminded me of Larry Brown. He was trying to tone down, like, his like, I don't know, his bop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just, you know, try to make it simplify, but also give him space to do what he wanted to do. And Jay Will was like, you
it's
know.
It's hard, yo.
This is hard, too. And I remember them having a, you know, argument. And I remember Hubie Brown saying, Jason, remember this. Pistol Pete never won shit. It was like, you know, like you had these art, but you can't. It's one thing I learned about basketball players, dog. You cannot stop a basketball player from being himself.
Mm-hmm.
You have to embrace his identity in order for him to be a better player. And coaches are now starting to figure that out.
Love that. And then any advice that you would want to give to point guards? Right, what they would want to look out for, you know, like what is that sauce that if you can impart on young point guards listening to this show?
I think you have to have the skill set and tenacity of Isaiah Thomas.
Mm.
I think because Isaiah was so far ahead of his time, this game and brand of basketball is perfect for his skill. It's almost like, you know, that toughness, the skill, the shot making and playmaking ability is – any point guard that has that in his system right now, which I don't know if we can say a point guard has the Isaiah Thomas in his system, young point guards,
right.
is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and to me, he set the bar, so study. Understand rhythms, understand flows, understand it's two dribbles removed from a screen.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just come down here and just get into your mix so quick. Steve Nash was the best at this. Steve Nash would make his teammates better and kill in the last 6 minutes of the game
because
he knew coaches don't like to waste their timeouts.
Yep.
So he hit you with all his counters late. You know, so you have that ability and understand you are a true maestro of music. You're a surgeon. When you go through and you perform, don't just give everything all at once. Control the game.
You are sitting on the bench. Whether you started, you tired, Your team is down. You've been in this position. You looked out, and it's a team you playing against on the court, and a motherfucking point guard is out there rocking. And you like, motherfucker, if I was on that side and you had to do what I do, oh, my God, I'd eat your ass up.
Put me, take Steve Blake off with the Lakers.
Thank
put
you.
Me with Cole.
Thank you.
You know what
Thank
I mean?
You.
Put me on a team with
Thank
Cole.
Thank you.
Any team
Thank
with Cole,
you.
Take them out.
Thank
put me
you.
With Cole, dog.
Thank you.
That mindset
Steve
with Cole.
Steve Blake, we take Derek Fisher off too. Man. We put Earl Washington.
Smush
that's
Parker
what it
gotta
was.
Go.
That's what I, hey, that, hey, that's what I needed to hear. It's no offense. It's just like, damn, bro, you have been gifted.
Ugh.
As a point guard, as a point guard, to be playing next to some greatness. You know what I mean? And you know, hey, hypothetically, I'd like to have, you know what I mean? Like, mine is like Steve Nash. Like, man, let me rock with Sean. Let me throw some lobs to Sean yeah. Marion. Amari Stoudemire.
Yeah.
Quinn Richardson out there knocking down threes. Joe Johnson knocking down. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Oh, you know how many dunks I would get, dude?
Yeah,
you know,
but you was getting the most money on the team.
Huh?
So that's why it's hard for you to do that.
No, hypothetically.
But I'm saying, you have to take a pay cut.
I wouldn't mind. I would not mind taking a pay cut to have 1 year where Steve Nash, right,
yeah,
would play point guard for the New Orleans Hornets. At the same time,
yeah,
I can have his position
yeah.
to be the point guard for the Phoenix Suns. Or just switch the dudes in the jersey, you know, like
yeah,
switch the style.
Yeah, switch the style, yeah.
Yeah, I want that style. Or Tony Parker.
Yeah.
You know, like Tony Parker, I fucking love Tony Parker, but I hate Tony Parker. He kicked my ass, you know yeah. what I mean? I'll be like, yo, bro, like, ah, this is a.
You want to get a pick from Tim.
Bro, this
is easier.
Bro, this is an unfair fight.
Yeah.
You got Ginobili, Tim, Pop.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm walking in. They y'all laugh, Pop laughing at me before the game even started. Shit. Like, we know we gonna lose.
Yeah.
So let Tony Parker be the dude that Pop laughing at and let Pop sick me on Tony Parker.
I'll tell you, I wish
Lord
I,
have mercy.
I wish I had UB Brown for at least 8 to 10 years of my career coaching.
That'd be
so
dope.
What coach would you want to steal from me would be UB Brown everywhere I went.
I actually love playing for Nelly. I like playing. Byron Scott had a good system.
Yeah,
he had a good system. It just wasn't the right time. And I like D'Antoni.
Yeah,
because D'Antoni, shit, you get to keep the ball in your hand the whole fucking time.
Let you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those would be like the three. But I love playing for Nelly because Nelly was just like he made me a better all around, like he used my overall talent.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like he was like, yeah, he a point guard, but he played me in the post. Like
yeah.
he made me like the best.
He moved you around.
Yeah, he made me
yeah.
like the best post.
Yeah.
You know, like I was the post. I was Shaq on our team. You know what
yeah.
I mean? And I like that because, you know, I used to work on my post game all the time. You
yeah.
feel what I'm saying? So I felt I had a post game and he was the first one to really like you a better post up player than you are a 3-point shooter.
Yeah.
So if I can get you behind,
yeah, that left block turns, the slow turn, right shoulder and fade.
Yeah. Man, this has been incredible, Earl. I feel like, you know, this part of the Point God podcast, this is the first episode that's been different. It's been the life and times of Earl Watson, the molding, right, of a dog.
Hey, what's up? This is Earl Watson, and you're listening to Point God with my bro, brother for life, Baron Davis.
Point God is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.